welcome to Tools in the Shed, a podcast powered by Cars Guide, ready to rip into car stuff that's caught our eye this week. I'm Cars Guide Deputy Editor James, and with me are Senior Journalist Richard.
Aloha.
And Managing Editor, Head of Video, Matt.
Hello.
This week, we're discussing the Subaru WRX that everyone loves to love. That's right, the 2022 Rex STI. We'll look at three entries to the Cars Guide garage from the past week, and we'll catch up with the world's second richest person. Yep, Bezos has knocked the deal eater off in this week's Must Watch. Remember, you can jump ahead courtesy of the time codes in the notes below, and you can click on the chapter markers in the timeline. So let's go. And first of all, it's a story that our own Chesto authored during the week. The new WRX targets world's most powerful four-cylinder engine. Subaru's 295 kilowatt monster just 12 months away.
Oh, man.
So I suppose it's just Subaru is continuing on with WRX and an STI version. And the reports Chesto has gotten onto say that they're aiming for 295 kilowatts in a 2.4-litre four-cylinder engine. Now, bear in mind, that is close to 400 horsepower. And in terms of targets the world's most powerful four-cylinder, it's not necessarily the case that they want to have that. They want to target Merck AMG's engine, which is up at 310 kilowatts for a 2-litre turbo engine.
No.
That's 415 horsepower, and it makes 500 newton metres. So we're getting into an amazing four-cylinder arms race in the all-wheel drive, hot hatch sedan type world, which I think is kind of amazing. What do you guys think?
It's not an arms race.
No.
See, Subaru thinks it's an arms race. But okay. See, Subaru's kind of like the American soldier that's still hiding in the jungle thinking that World War II is still going on. See, ever since the Lancer Evo departed, for some reason, Subaru still thinks it's got a fight to fight. There's no chance it's going to take on the A45. No, blue moon.
I'm just thinking of that person in the jungle, the very old man now.
Yes, very old.
Still operating under
but that still, impression. But still focused. And that's exactly, and that is Subaru. They're still in the jungle thinking that there's a Lancer Evo out there, and it's not. You can come out now. The war's over, Subaru.
That's an interesting
cut it out.
Point. Yeah.
Campbell?
I think, Richard, you are partially correct. I think that there's still something to be said for brands pursuing the ultimate in their own engineering self and, you know, pushing the limits of what a boxer engine is capable of, a 2.4-litre four-cylinder engine. Yeah, you're right, JC. The 2-litre in the Merc is a smaller capacity and offers insane outputs. And no one, I mean, I think Mercedes thinks that they have to better themselves every single time they do something new. You know, good on them for that. At the expense of what, you know, could it be longevity, durability, who knows? But
I sometimes think that crackles and pops out of your exhaust pipe could be a, you know, a cylinder like a piston punching its way through the block.
Thankfully, it doesn't seem that there's been any such issues. But, yeah, I think the interesting thing about this is there's still going to be two versions of WRX and then the step up to STI.
Yeah.
So you've got the traditional WRX, which will still be a very fast and, you know, hopefully very fun car. Based on everything we've learned about this new platform with Subaru, the new global platform, the cars drive really well. They might not be the most engaging cars to drive, and hopefully they have some tricks up their sleeve to tune some more fun into the drive experience.
Right.
But I was part of the Subaru Outback press event this week, and they let slip a couple of things about new WRX and STI. Firstly, new WRX, we know it's coming in 2021, so this year. STI will be later on. But WRX, now, a bit of a sort of mixed message here.
Whisper okay. So they don't hear.
It will stick to the core of Subaru DNA, right?
Ew.
This new WRX, but expect the unexpected.
Oh, what does that mean?
so we need a pair of gene shears or something to rearrange the DNA.
It's going to stick to the core. Stick to the core. What the heck does that mean?
I mean, I think it means non-linear throttle response. I think it means you just get a big whoosh of turbo.
The whoosh bang,
whoosh bang, yeah.
Does it mean, is the unexpected that they won't use a CVT in the future?
Well, interesting you mentioned that, because so I'd like to have you guys have a guess about what the take-up of CVTs in WRXs is. Any percentage, have a guess.
The take-up of CVT in any WRX?
Like, is
I'd percentage? Say 80-20, 80 manual, 20%
CVT. I was going to say 15% auto, like CVT.
Okay. Mine's prepare to be blown. It's about 70% automatic in the current generation.
No.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so disappointing.
I didn't realize there were that many idiots.
Right. So, okay.
This is the thing. They have suggested, the Subaru Australia team have told me that the automatic take-up has been much higher than they expected. You know, it's a CVT automatic and a WRX. Those worlds do not gel in my mind.
No.
But they've said that it's gone beyond their expectations. It's been the best-selling generation of WRX ever. And it's attracted new people to the brand because they might not have otherwise considered a WRX if it was manual only.
That's so interesting because, you know, one of the things a WRX STI would have over an AMG 45S, you know, for example, is the opportunity to have a manual gearbox instead of an auto transmission or, you know, of whatever stripe.
Yep.
That's really surprising.
And I think that's
such a low ratio.
That's the different tiers of WRX and STI. The STI is that hardcore
producer. Okay.
According to Chesto's report, the STI will remain manual only. So there won't be a CVT there, which is, I mean, thank you. it's one of those things that, you know, there's customer demand for automatics in performance cars, and because people want to be able to just plant their foot and zoom, and that's what these sorts of cars allow them.
Are we seeing, is this a wider problem in that people don't know how to drive?
I had exactly the same thought, Richard. I reckon you're possibly onto something there, that we're seeing a generation of drivers wash through that aren't comfortable with driving a manual car.
Because in my mind, not being able to drive a manual is like not being able to write with a pen. Do you know what I mean? Like, sure, we all write on keyboards now, but, you know, you've got to learn to write with a pen first.
Right? Got you. Mm. That's a really good analogy. Yes. I mean, there's a lot of joy in driving with a manual gearbox.
Yep.
There can be with a really great dual clutch. I like it with the paddles on the wheel and you're really having a bit of a go.
Yeah.
And it complements what you're doing. There's good things to be said about both options, but I agree with you, Richard. I'm for save the manuals. You know, I've been a subscriber to Current Drivers campaign in the US that they've been running for yonks, which is all about save the manuals. I think there's a lot to be said for them.
It's so much more engaging, especially with a performance car. I mean, I totally get it if you're driving a Subaru Brumby, and, you know, I've driven Subaru Brumbies before, like the one behind you, Matt Campbell, with a manual, and in, you know, traffic in the CBD, it's not fun. But when you're in a WRX STI and you've got a manual, it just makes the experience, or even just a regular WRX, it just makes the experience so much more engaging and fun.
Actually, the manuals in those older Subarus, like the Brumby and the Leone and ones of that era, I want to say 70s, maybe, late 70s, they were so mechanical. There was no kind of refinement at all.
No.
You could feel the gears meshing through your hand. It was really quite physical. And there's a lot to be said for that too, you know.
And I was a WRX owner once upon a time. I owned a 98 model hatch, the wagon style hatch. And I love that car.
Really cool body shape.
Love that car so much. The manual shift was, you know, combined with the turbo lag and the whoosh effect and the big exhaust they put on it and the cold air intake and all that sort of stuff.
All legal, of course.
Yeah.
And you wrapped it fluorescent orange.
No. It was reddish blue. It was quite a rare color.
Okay.
Reddish blue. Yeah. But anyway, I think people like me are of a certain age where they owned one of those cars in their, say, early 20s. I'm now in my mid 30s. And I'm looking for, you know, maybe a wagon or maybe an SUV that lives up to that WRX-ness. And I guess that for a lot of people, that before was Forester GT or Forester XT. But they've told us now that they have no interest in offering a turbocharged version of the Forester, but they are looking at a turbo version of the Outback, which they see as a better fit. Now, for me, I think they've got it the wrong way around.
Totally.
Yeah.
I think so too. But you'd bring the XV into that picture as well and maybe do something with it, you know?
I pitched to them. This was years ago. Like when the first, planning. When the first generation...
Did you wear a suit? Did you go in with it? Did you have like big slides? And
it stuff? Was like Shark Tank. It was really quite they told me to get out. But when the first generation XV arrived at the Australian launch, I was talking to the product people. I'm saying, you guys, are you pushing for a WRXV? Because that's where the market will move. You know, the performance SUV is where the market's going to go. Now, we're seeing it happening. It's maybe not, maybe I was a few years ahead of the times.
As you always are, though. You are.
That's right.
You should see the fashions that I rock when I'm not wearing the Cars Guide gear.
You're into the raver style trousers, aren't you?
Yes. Yeah, I've got so many pockets.
Just break out the glow stick now.
Yes.
But I honestly, I wonder whether you guys feel the same way about, is Outback the wrong thing to have a turbo and Forester should be the car they're focusing on with that?
I reckon just gut reaction to that. I reckon Outback is not the right option.
No.
But something like an XV with more of a performance focus would serve them pretty well.
Absolutely. The Outback is the hearse of Subarus. Like I know that sounds pretty morbid, but it is. It's big and long and it's kind of just, you know, for carrying stuff.
But then by the same token, what do we know? We thought everyone was buying manual WRXs.
We don't know anything.
All right. Very interesting. So I suppose at the least we can say that it looks like the WRX, which we're expecting this year, will have that 2.4-litre engine, but the STI will dial it up to 10 and 11 in 2022, probably. And it'll be manual. I presume there'll be a choice of manual and CVT again in the WRX.
Yes.
But we might be seeing a generation of non-manual drivers purely because there are so few manual cars available. And even in the used car market, the autos are just washing through and getting rid of a lot of manuals, you know? It's kind of sad.
Sorry, Matt, you were going to say?
I was going to say, your analogy about handwriting and learning to write with your hand rather than learning, like how that equates to learning a driver manual. I'm just glad that people with handwriting like mine aren't driving on the road. What a disaster.
Well, they're in Dash Cam Owners Australia videos on YouTube.
They are.
Which is a fantastic rabbit hole to go down, I must admit. Yeah.
To be honest with you, look, I think it's good. I think I'm a petrol head myself and I love seeing increases in horsepower, especially in small capacity engines, which can almost produce 400 horsepower. That's outrageous. But I really think that the fight for A45 is really to do with Audi's, RS3 cool. And, BMW's, one and two cool. series.
It's like the pub fight where there are three big blokes going at it.
Yeah.
Hammer and tongs over there and you're like, Come on, I'll have you.
Yeah, exactly right. It's the pub fight with, Conor McGregor and Caleb,
that guy.
Nuremberg. I've forgotten his last name. Then you've got the local who walks into the Dungog RSL and goes, I'll take you on. And it's might be big in Dungog, but maybe not on a world scale.
Better known as Bogan Jesus.
Yes.
Come on, everyone. Yes.
Can we get a t-shirt that says I'm big in Dungog?
I'm big in Dungog.
Fabulous Dougie Walters, walks on water, great Australian all-round cricket player, comes from Dungog.
Yes.
Very good town.
Shout out to Doug, what a great bloke. Anyway, how did we get to Doug Walters from Subaru WRX STIs? Anyway, that's where we'll leave it. But thank you very much for that discussion. It'd be great to hear what people make of all of that, whether the WRX and the high-performance version is still in your kind of orbit, whether it's something you aspire to or despise, let us know what you think. That'd be fantastic. But we'll move to our garage. And Richard,
yes,
I'd like to start with you, please. And you've been driving a Hyundai. And you've been at the more affordable end of things. Can you let us know what you've been driving, please?
Oh, yeah. Look, I've been driving a lot of Hyundais lately, but it's been quite a long time. It's probably been about a year since I've driven an i30. And that's because the world's gone SUV crazy. Yep. So we've had, you know, the Hyundai Kona, and we've had Santa Fe's, and we've had, you know, Palisades and everything else. Everything else. And it's getting back into just a base grade. It's an entry-level Hyundai i30 reminded me of how good cars were. And I mean cars as opposed to SUVs. I've really only driven it for a day or so, but the handling and you know the performance of the on-road performance of a hatch is so different to a hatch which has been converted into an SUV, and I've really really missed it. This entry grade, so they've taken out the old entry grade and they've shuffled the line down a bit, so the new entry grade gets stuff like alloy wheels. I actually thought that they gave me the wrong car when I picked it up yesterday, because I'm looking at the wheels going, this is the base spec. So you get inside and it is a little bit base specy inside as well, but there's soft touch surfaces on the elbow pads, which is good. Hyundai and Kia are both quite notorious for entry grades being quite hard plastics on the inside. And the Seltos, the Kia Seltos, for instance, wears your elbows out.
I hate sore elbow syndrome.
Yes.
Absolutely hate that.
Well, the entry grade,
SES,
SES. It's a genuine disease.
Yeah.
Disorder.
Yeah.
That's right. No SES in the entry grade i30. It's got padded elbow rests. It's pretty well appointed. But yeah, I've just got to say, just, you know, driving it around for the last 24 hours, it's been a bit of a refresher course in what it's like not to drive a car that's on stilts. So, I'm going to spend the next week with that. I'm writing the new Range review because it's an updated Range. It's got a new look, and that'll be coming out next week. So look forward to that.
Where do you stand, Richard, on the Hyundai versus Kia kind of design thing? I mean, obviously they're under the one roof and they're both heading in pretty distinctive directions in terms of the way they look. Where do you put the i30 in the scheme of things?
I think Kia's actually got the edge over Hyundai in terms of the design stakes at the moment. I think Sorento is a really, really good looking thing. And I think Hyundai seem to be trying to mix things up a little bit. We're seeing grills which are different across the entire family. And that's kind of a departure from like traditional auto manufacturers who try to keep the same family face. So we're seeing, you know, Palisades with different looks to, you know, Santa Fe's to i30s. I'm not really sold on, and you'll see it if you're watching on YouTube, the i30 that I'm driving at the moment, the new face of the i30. I don't know. Let us know what you think.
Yeah,
cool. But yeah, I think Kia's got the edge at the moment. So yeah,
I totally agree. Even the Carnival, shout out to Justin.
Yeah,
agree. Now, thank you very much, Richard.
Thank you,
Matt. We'll move to you and
yep.
completely different style of vehicle, which I happen to have a soft spot for. Tell us all about it, please.
Volkswagen Transporter. So there's a lot to the Transporter. If you're unaware, it's a commercial van, but it spins off in a few different derivatives. You can get it as a two-seat van, or as a five-seat crew van, or as a three-seat single cab chassis ute, six-seat dual cab chassis ute. And then they spin it off into people mover derivatives as well. So there's the multivan. There's also a Caravelle, which is a 9-seater. So there's multiple ways that you can basically get your transport.
It's that one, Matt, that you mentioned. I think it was the crew cab chassis with the tray on the back. That's the one that'll be at the Shannon's auctions in 35 years, people will be going nuts to get it.
Yes. I did drive one of the crew cab chassis versions with 500 kilos in the back, and they come standard with a really clever tray, the cab chassis models, with, you know, the proper flip down sides. The back sort of tailgate has a step on it as well, so a flip down step, so you can get in and out a bit easier. And they're, you know, really high quality feeling trays. The one I drove was the TDI 450 4Motion with a 7-speed DSG.
Wow.
So it's all-wheel drive with 450 Newton meters and a dual clutch. So it's basically a performance car.
Yeah.
But it's just the most practical performance car you can buy.
But I imagine the gearing and where you start to get your torque means that it would be very handy in terms of with that load on board. How did it go?
Oh, extreme. Like, I didn't even feel it, you know, like 500 kilos was like whatever. I think that's one of the things that I've found myself thinking more and more with Volkswagen and, you know, most dual clutch applications in that sense is that they work best when they're diesel. They work best when they're commercial vehicle focused because they seem to have this gearing and management of traction that just sort of allows you to get away from a line quickly and without much fuss. Whereas in some of the small capacity petrol engines with dual clutch transmissions, you sort of find yourself having that moment of the engine start, stop, the turbo lag, the transmission figuring out what happens next, and then you go. Mm. Whereas in these sorts of diesel applications, it's much more, I guess, user-friendly. And so there are a few different powertrains available, all diesel. So there's a TDI 250, which is an 81-kilowatt 2-litre engine with a 5-speed manual.
Wow.
Only a 5-speed
actually
manual.
Maybe that's the one that'll be in the classic car.
Yeah.
Not many people are going to buy that one.
No.
And that's the other thing. Like there's a TDI 340 above that, which is a single turbo diesel 2-litre as well, with 110 kilowatts and 340 newton meters. And then the 2-litre twin turbo TDI 450, which is the same engine as you get in a 2-litre Amarok.
I was going to say, it sounds familiar. Yep.
So there's a few different derivatives there to choose from. You've got the van, basically you can build it to your spec. So you get like, if you buy a TDI 340, you can have it as manual or auto. You can choose whether you want lining in the back of it, whether you want a bulkhead, whether you want doors on both sides or just the curb side, whether you want barn doors,
what about roof. Thick pile carpet and a heart-shaped divider and a mirror ball in the back.
You might have to go to a different place, maybe in Western Sydney, to get that sorted out.
Specialise in that. Mm.
Yeah.
I went to the last one when that generation before came out. I went to that launch, Matt. And I've got to say, it's one of the most difficult reviews to write because there's so many variants.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. And that's the thing. Like you can essentially take, say, a $45,000 van and spec it as such, because there's so much choice and option ability, you can spec it up to about $75,000 or $80,000 if that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
And that's, I guess, one of the strengths of the Transporter is that you can build it to suit your needs, whereas some of the other vans out there are a bit more, this is what you get, you know?
For example,
the Toyota Hiace, you still can't get that. It might be the best-selling van in the country, but you still can't get it with barn doors at the back, which... Right. Rules it out for a lot of people who like to forkload loads into the back with a forklift because you can't get underneath it. It's an interesting van, a complex range, as you say, Richard. But with the review, if it's not live already, it'll be live very soon. So keep an eye.
Well, it's interesting too, isn't it? As a commercial, if you're a business and you're running a particular vehicle and you're sending a message with the vehicle that you've bought, you've sign written your van or whatever it is. I always think a Volkswagen Transporter is such a great choice because it's saying we're quality, but we're not up ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think that's possibly why X-Class Merc didn't fire.
Yes.
Because you're sending a message that, we're doing too well here.
Well, that's it.
You don't want to send that message.
If you're a florist and you turn up in a V-Class Mercedes-Benz, it's like, well, hang on, you're charging a bit much for your petunias. You know what I mean?
That's why this bunch of roses is $170.
That's right. But if you turn up in a Volkswagen, van, it's like, look, he's doing well enough to be able to afford that. Yep. But at the same time, obviously making a good deal for me that he can't afford
Benz. Exactly. I think it's the perfect choice from a brand kind of positioning point of view.
I think from a family perspective as well, we had one, a year or so back. And look, I really think vans are for, people who aren't in denial. There are some families who are trying to squeeze themselves into SUVs that are so-called 7-seat SUVs, which is not, which is a 5 with two extra little spots you can squish kids into. Mm. But a van is, it's really what you need.
You're embracing it.
You're embracing it. There was one rainy day where we went on a picnic and we couldn't even get out of the van. So we just had the picnic in the van. You could swivel the seats around and just have it in there. And, you know, I think for a family with three kids or four kids, you know, it's your only choice.
I've done exactly the same thing because all I can think of is flaky puff pastry because we were eating lunch inside the van. I think I'm going to have to vacuum this out afterwards. But you're right. It's very livable in that sense.
Yes.
And multivan, so that's the people mover derivative. There's a bunch of new different specs of multivan, including a couple called the Cruise Grade, which have and they've gone with a much more, I guess, eye-catching color combination and a few different options there. And we will have a family review of that van coming up in a couple of weeks' time by Nadal, so keep an eye out for that. And we've also got Crafty doing the California, which is the camper van version of these new vans.
I was going to say... picture of Crafty in his boardies in a singlet with the...
I've seen it. You've got to see it to believe it. Any news on Combi? I know they keep rolling that name out, but are we ever going to see a real Combi?
So they have used like a modern day Combi as their theme for this new or T6.1 generation of the multivan.
Yeah.
And I think maybe the real moment will be when the T7 transporter arrives, which will have, it'll be in a couple of years probably for us. It'll have electrification as a key pillar to it. And I think that that's where we'll see maybe, you know, they call it Bulli in Germany or Combi. So we might see a bit more retro marketing around that. And
those Bulli concepts, I think there's been two of them.
Yeah,
they both look fantastic, and everybody gets fired up, and there's a lot of buzz about it. And then it hasn't seemed to go anywhere.
No, it's worse than a Subaru ComGen of a car that's going to be coming out that doesn't. You know, I think we saw 2013. We saw the, or might have been around about then. We saw the Bulli concept come out. It was like a red and white one, and that was supposed to be all electric, and that didn't really happen beyond the motor show. And we've seen more and other examples of that over the years, but nothing on our roads.
And they need to get to it because the original owners of the Combis might not be around that much longer.
Matt, maybe you could dust off your Subaru presentation and just book an appointment with Volkswagen and get them cracking on it.
With your easel, with your big cans.
Yep.
This is you. This is where you want to be.
Okay.
Good.
Do it in like 70s gear for like a Combi sort of themed.
I've got quite the outfit for that.
Well, you do.
Yes.
Okay, let's not go there. Yeah. but that is all very exciting. Looking forward to maybe having a steer at one of those
in
coming weeks and months, but that's very exciting. I'll just finish things off. I had the opportunity to drive the Merc AMG E63S, which is an update. It's the 4-litre twin turbo V8 that stays the same, 450 kilowatts, which is just a lazy 612 horsepower. It's 850 newton meters between 25 and 4500, so just this beautifully thick, broad band of mega torque. Not 9-speed auto, which helps keep you in that zone as well. All-wheel drive, of course, 4MATIC plus, and it's about 250k. So it's competing with things like an RS7 Audi Sportback, a BMW M5 Competition, and although it's a little dearer, a Porsche Panamera GTS. So it's just got this Germanness around it. You were talking before, Richard, about the smaller AMGs. It is a bit of an internal fight domestically with these German brands. But the thing about this car is customers apparently had told AMG, we want it to be a bit more comfortable. We want to be able to dial in more comfort to go with all this fire and brimstone. And I think they've absolutely got it right because the adaptive suspension, it's an air suspension with adaptive dampers, and your ability to go from comfort, which is fair dinkum very comfortable, to a much more buttoned down, very taut setting. It just does it beautifully and seamlessly. And the four-wheel drive system has been made a little smoother, the way it actually distributes the rear axles permanently driven and then variable torque up to the front axle. It does that super beautifully as well. So you've just got this ability with the flick of a few switches to change the car's character quite dramatically. And it goes hard, you know. It really does. It's got a lot of performance and mega safety. I've just written the review and gave it 10 out of 10 for safety. It's pretty much the standard at the moment. Everything you'd want from active bonnet through every assist. I mean, I've got assist overload with all of the advanced active safety tech that's in the thing, 9 airbags, all of these other things. Really great from a safety point of view. And I actually found it hard to pick many holes with it, in it. And the rear door apertures in the current E-Class are quite small. And I think any full-size adult is going to have to kind of fold themselves in and fold themselves out. Once you're in there, it's okay. But just somehow this door aperture is quite awkward, and that's a bit of a pain when you've got people going in the rear of the car. The new touch-sensitive controllers on the steering wheel, there's a new steering wheel that's like 3 dual spokes, and it looks very cool, but Merck's gone to a different way of using those little controllers on the wheel, and I find them really fiddly, and I don't think it's been a step forward. Mm-hmm. And as you might expect, it's just a little bit thirsty. So the Acclaim 12.3 litres, and I got nearly 18 over the time I had with the car, but I was, of course, in the line of duty, just exploring its dynamic abilities as well. So, but there, a little bit thirsty. But I think it's just a more mature take than the A-Class and its derivatives for AMG. But it's not quite as overbearing as the big GTs and SUVs and what have you. It's a really nice kind of mid-zone, and I think it looks great. So I was really impressed with it.
I'm sort of perplexed as to why those rear doors are so small, because we're not talking about a C-class here, or you know, a CLA or an A-class or something like that. This is a car which could possibly be used as hire cars, and how is that going to suit people getting into the back? I watched your video and trying to get in there.
It's close to 5 meters long end to end, so it's quite a lengthy car, and 3 meters of that is wheelbase. So you would think that there'd be enough room to kind of divvy it up equitably between front and rear doors, but somehow something didn't go quite right. And for me anyway, it might be different for others. I just found it a bit awkward to get.
People have got to see the video, because it is like those doors are ridiculously tiny. Like it just doesn't look right. Especially, you know, when even just opening and seeing the aperture they made. This is a 5 meter long
car. The doors
car.
Actually open quite a long way.
Yeah,
they go out, but that's not the thing.
No,
it's just the space that you've got
to get into.
As large as you'd like it to be.
JC, you didn't point out the biggest shortcoming is that it's only a sedan. Right?
Yeah, yes. Wagon would be amazing.
Oh, a wagon would just be.
It would. Beautiful. Because, well, I suppose you just have to slum it and go with an RS6. if you want a wagon,
I suppose.
Possibly the greatest vehicle in the world.
Yeah. But,
it was a lot of fun. Driving that car, we had it for a few days. It was a launch drive, and yes, there's a review and a video up now, so if you want to have a look at it. But
if you're dipping into your funds there, JC, what are you buying? Are you buying an RS6? Are you buying an E63 or an M5? Is it one that stands out most to you in your mind?
I would buy an RS6. I'm a big RS6 fan, and I like wagons.
Yeah.
So for me, that's a magical combination.
Yeah,
I think RS6 as well. Although the wheels are too big.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are
very large.
There was a Q8 that we had recently. It had 23s on it.
That's ridiculous.
It looked like a donk straight out of LA. You know, it's sort of just huge wheels on it. Absolutely incredible. Anyway, that was what I was driving this weekend. It was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
And so now we'll go do a bit of feedback. From last week. And last week, we were talking about a story that Justin Hilliard had written about Arctic trucks. Now, for those in the know, Arctic trucks build very heavy duty, as the name implies, versions of various utes to go into arduous situations, be it Arctic or desert or goodness knows what. And we had feedback from a person called Marini. And we had said that these things were available, the Toyota version anyway, which is the AT35, was available through Toyota dealers in the UK. And Marini says, not just in the UK, they're also made in Finland, here in Finland, so that's where that person is. A few other places all over Europe. And yes, you can buy Arctic trucks from local Toyota dealers, built like the customer wants. So you can pretty much customize it to your specific needs. not just Toyota, Nissan, Isuzu, and they have official QVM, which is qualified vehicle modifier status with Ford. So they're getting closer and closer to these OEMs. And I suppose it still begs the question, wouldn't it be great to have them here?
Well, do we need them here? I mean, well, it's not very Arctic.
No.
I mean, it gets chilly.
It'd be a narrow market if you're just talking about people who want to, you know, trundle along to Kosciuszko or something for 1 month a year. But I think the point being that if you're in the Middle East or in the Outback or whatever, they'll build something that's been reinforced, raised, whatever, to your specific needs, and the manufacturer will give it a stamp of approval, which is pretty nice.
Wow. Look, JC, you and I have sort of come from a background where... On a different occasion where we've had to sort of work in, OEM stuff and genuine parts and that type of stuff. And that would be a kind of a legal nightmare in some ways in getting that stamp of approval. But if you can, that'd be fantastic.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it gives you that imprimatur and customers feel confident about going with it for sure. So, you know, come on. It could be interesting, Toyota.
Absolutely.
Australia.
Absolutely.
Oggy says they'd only sell hundreds per month. And I thought, well, that's a lot. If they managed to sell even 100 a month, that'd be millions
of dollars of profit per year.
Exactly.
Who are they selling to sort of government organisations and Arctic research survey groups and that type of thing? Or
I don't profess to be an expert, but just going on their website, it's all of that, Richard. It seems like there are some Arctic expeditions. They'll do you a 6x4. Or maybe it's a 6x6, must be, and change the body, reinforce the chassis, all of those things. So, yes, it would be for all kinds of customers, I'd imagine.
Yeah, well, there's obviously a demand there. So,
If they sold hundreds, I think they'd be really happy. But Senior Bob, welcome back, Senior.
Thanks.
Says,
Senior.
Toyota has just re-released the V6 4-litre petrol Adventure Hilux in the Middle East. Bring it back to Australia, Toyota, with a supercharger, please. He says, or an LS7, or an LSA, even better. Lol. And I had a look over on Saudi Arabia's Toyota site. DC Adventure, 4-litre 4x4. It's 175 kilowatts, 376 newton metres. It gets 18-inch alloys, rear diff lock, CarPlay, lots of kit. And that's 162,610 Saudi Arabian reals.
Wow. Right. That sounds like a lot.
It sounds like a lot. It converts to
$385.
Nearly 56 grand Australian dollars.
Nothing.
56,000 Australian dollars. So it's there, and Senior Bob wants it with a supercharger. So fair enough. And he also chimed in with, why would Ford put a V8 in the 21 Ranger? It's not like a V8 Ram sells here. Oh, hang on. Do it, Ford, all caps. Do it, Ford. So Senior Bob made
I love Senior
Felix
Bob.
Plane. Andrew D says, I think you guys need to go back to the future and check out Marty McFly's Toyota 4Runner. Hilux, I think it was actually an SR. His rig is so far ahead of its time, pun intended. Check it out. But then he says, as far as Ford Ranger Raptor in particular is concerned, how good would the Barra Turbo be in it? You know, take a look at the YouTuber from Queensland, where he and his mates have swapped out the Toyota engine in Land Cruisers with a Barra Turbo. And look, thank you, Andrew, because I went down this rabbit hole on YouTube where I found actually a guy in Melbourne who's put a Barra swap into a FJ45 body mounted on an 80 series chassis, and he's got a Ford Barra engine in. And he works for a major OEM down in Melbourne. He is an engineer and he's doing it properly, and it's fantastic.
I was going to say, that sounds like a Franken-Barra, but it's actually, if it's engineered,
it's awesome. So we'll have a bit of footage of that for people watching on YouTube. Awesome. He, so far, is doing a very good job. But TGV, the very fast train, chimed in with, you know, Ranger with a 6-turbo, 4-litre petrol. Would have been easier to just give the Falcon Ute, the all-wheel drive running gear from the Territory, combined with a rear diff lock. Shame Ford of Australia never entertained that idea.
That could have saved a few things for Ford Australia.
Well, it put me in mind of that XY Falcon 4x4 that was the tail end of that XY model. In fact, overlapped with the XA. That strangely raised. You know, we'll have a picture up again for people on YouTube. But And would have been an interesting car.
And Ford Australia dabbled in the rugged terrain vehicle, the RTV version of the Falcon Ute, which was still rear-wheel drive but had the diff lock. And it was, you know, it was well received and is still a you know, a pretty desirable ute for a lot of people out there. And yeah, I think maybe if they'd done the Holden Crewman, but as a later version in a Ford body, could have done something.
I suppose it's not to denigrate anybody's point of view, but it's very easy in retrospect, isn't it, to think what might have been a good move. But if you'd known what was coming, you probably would have gone the roll the dice and give something a try rather than trying to shore up what was happening already. You'd be a little more, pardon the pun, adventurous. You know?
Well, it's WRXV after all.
There it is. Mm. There it is. A perfect example.
Subaru lost a big chance there.
Yep.
Amon Nixon made his thoughts plain. All caps, do a review of the 2021 Toyota Prado GX.
Wow, that's specific.
Yeah, so we're understanding orders. I know, and I had a look. I know last year, I think, Matt, you did a GX Prado, but that was a 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, look, all we can do is take Amon's thoughts on board.
Thanks, Amon.
Thanks, Amon.
If there's one available.
Let's do it.
FBG, then it's capital K-O-U-T. So
FBG.
I'm possibly missing something semi-obscene there, but anyway. he says, Crafty's got to be my favourite 4x4 journo. Bloke's seen it all twice and tells it straight. He's like a 4B Yoda. So...
I have seen Crafty jump out of a cab while it's still moving, do a barrel roll, and then run off into the traffic for no particular reason. That's the type of guy he is. He's the Bruce Willis of Cars Guy.
He is, and he does. He's a diehard.
He is.
And speaking of diehard, it's time for Musk Watch. Righto. So first up, people who were with us last week will realise or remember that Tesla, with the imprimatur of their chief executive, had bought $1.5 billion worth of Bitcoin. Mm. Now, according to Yahoo Finance, that given the years of net losses from its business, it's possible Tesla made more in profit off of one single $1.5 billion Bitcoin purchase than it did from the profits on its cars in the last decade. So just in a kind of cryptocurrency speculation, they've picked up more money. So
I don't understand any of that at all. My mind just doesn't, you know, I know each word you're saying, but it doesn't mean any. What does it mean?
Right. Well, it's all to do with a different currency. And monies, like national monies, not cash.
Real money. I thought the arse fell out of Bitcoin. I thought it was all over.
I think it's probably the most stirring roller coaster ride in the world. it would be the highs and lows, writ large. But it depends apparently on when Tesla bought its Bitcoin as to how much they've potentially made. So the least they've made is about $300 million, and the most they've made is close to a billion.
What?
So it's just ridiculous. The current Bitcoin price is $48,450. Yeah. That's a Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Is nearly 50 grand Australian.
And it was $52,000 early this week or something. It reached a record level. But this just fuels that, you know, the narrative that Tesla is not a car company. It's an investment company and a data company that just manages its money very differently to what car companies do.
You know what somebody told me the other day?
Yeah.
Somebody told me that they had $1 million in Bitcoin. They just can't get to it. What does that mean?
I've lost the login for the website. Yeah.
Well, wouldn't that be frustrating? Yeah. You're watching Bitcoin going down and you just want to sell it. Yeah. You can't get into your account. But
there was some dude who threw out a hard drive with $17 million worth of Bitcoin on it or something.
And he was offering like a $4 million reward or something like that.
Yeah.
So, threw out the hard drive.
Yeah. This is what I don't understand. This is why I don't get Bitcoin.
Right.
Is it bits, as in it's an actual bit, like a byte.
Look, I think part of the idea was fractional ownership, so yeah, that you would buy a part of a Bitcoin.
Is it an actual coin? Is it a coin?
No.
Is it made out of metal?
No. Well, there is one that's been photographed somewhere.
Yeah,
it's a crypto online, you know, digital currency, and people decide how much it's going to be worth.
So this is just like shares. It's just imaginary, really. Yes.
And people, like,
are you buying some now, Richard?
Yes. No, I'm going to be like Joe Rogan's Jamie and look and Google it. Bitcoin, okay. Bitcoin picture. Oh, there's one. There's one.
We'll have a picture up for people watching.
Yeah, there we go. I'll put that up now.
But what it has done is it's validated the currency. You know, when a business like Tesla goes in and buys $1.5 billion worth, other companies now are starting to think about it. Your Googles and your other business going, that's actually not a bad way to make a profit. So it becomes more mainstream and more established simply through Elon's decision via Tesla to purchase such a big chunk of it.
Yeah.
So it's a self-fulfilling thing in a way. He's manipulating the market once again.
Oh, my God. But society's going to collapse. We're going to go back to... You're going to have to learn to drive manuals again.
Yes,
we're going back to the beginning.
Get your pens out.
We might have to learn how to drive a
pre-selector. Get your pens out. Yeah. Manuals and biros all over again.
Yeah. So we'll have our feet through the floor like Fred Flintstone.
Yeah.
But he did through the week on Where Else But Twitter post a meme that I have to admit, I put my hand up, I did laugh absolutely when I saw it. It's a woman in a hospital bed looking deathly ill and a man at the other end, you know, with his hand over his mouth just, and the caption says, "Kevin, I'm dying, please stop beatboxing." And I thought that was funny. Now,
I saw that too and I laughed as well.
Now, so KingCoin says, "Doge is dying. Stop buying." Okay, got it. Like anything that Elon says is some kind of veiled instruction as to what to do in terms of your investments. Vendetta proved that it's actually an old meme by posting up a manga version of exactly the same thing. And Colab said, "This you," and it was Elon in March 19, 2020, "based on current trends, probably close to zero new cases in US too by end of April." So people were taking offense that he was making a joke about someone that's ill and dying in bed because of the tragic state of affairs in terms of coronavirus in America. And it made me sit up straight and think, anyway, like I said, I did laugh. But then Madissa Kazmi said, "Keep it up with your lame jokes as losing your credibility via coins." So Madissa came in with a late burn there on that. But what you can say with authority on the share price is that it is down again. So $798, down nearly $7. It was $804 and something last week. So it dropped $50 the week before that. So there's a distinct trajectory here. And Simon Constable in Forbes has said, yes, Tesla stock really is overvalued, which is something, you know, various people have been saying for yonks. But it's up 410% in the year through Friday just gone. So for that 12-month period, the Standard & Poor's 500 is up 16%. So we're talking 410%, 16%. There's a bit of a disparity there. The forward-looking price-to-earnings ratio is at 200. That is, it's trading at 200 times next year's profits, next year's projected profits, which is quite a ratio.
That's crazy.
And according to some research...
I'm confused. But anyway,
That Simon Constable had found, says Tesla is 55% likely to fail to meet those required profit levels.
Also so confused.
He finished up with a pretty damning statement. He said, "Anyone who's played cards knows that it's prudent to fold your hand when the odds are against you. And for investors in Tesla, the time to fold may have come."
Oh, that's a bit negative.
Yes. He's just said the stuff's massively overpriced. So that's the position, put it that way. But with that, we have reached the finish line. And I want to say thank you, Richard.
Thank you.
And thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
And thanks to our head of potatoes, Rasputin impersonator and freelance sperm donor, Mr. Pritchard, for his production plate spinning skills. Today, he's wearing a T-shirt saying, "If you have a problem, if no one else can help, if you can find them, Maybe you can hire the A-team. He's also wearing a high-vis kilt and beer Ooh. Socks.
Oh, look.
Beer socks.
Hey, he's been invading my wardrobe.
Yes. What are beer socks?
There's a picture on the screen for people on YouTube. It's basically, so two tankards of beer that you wear as socks. Just ask Mr. Pritchard after the show.
Mm.
Let us know your thoughts. You can find Cars Guide on Facebook and Instagram, or email us at comments@carsguide.com.au. If you're an Apple Podcast listener, please rate and review us. Remember, you can also watch us on YouTube. And if you are already, make sure you subscribe to the Cars Guide YouTube channel so you can stay on top of all our latest content. But before we go, drove into the city this week to drop off some things to a mate. Took me less than 5 minutes from the time I parked to becoming
out. Whereabouts in the city?
Whereabouts in building, the city? Pitt Street.
Okay.
But sure enough, there's a parking ranger writing up a ticket. So I bowled up to him and said, come on, friend, how about giving a bloke a break? He ignored me and continued writing the ticket. So I said to him, haven't you got anything better to do, you heartless scumbag? He glared at me and started writing another ticket for having a bald tire. So I called him a brain-dead drongo. He finished the second ticket and put it on the car with the first. Then he started to write a third ticket. This went on for about 10 minutes. The more I abused him, the more tickets he wrote. But hey, I didn't give a damn. My car was parked around the corner.
Oh, man.
That's slack, that poor person with all the tickets.